Chapter 162. Persons and things in general. Mr. and Mrs. John Harmon's first delightful occupation was to set all matters right that had strayed in any way wrong, or that might, could, would, or should have strayed in any way wrong, while their name was in abeyance. In tracing out affairs for which John's fictitious death was to be considered in any way responsible, they used a very broad and free construction, regarding, for instance, the doll's dressmaker as having a claim on their protection, because of her association with Mrs. Eugene Rayburn, and because of Mrs. Eugene's old association, in her turn, with the dark side of the story. It followed that the old man, Riah, as a good and serviceable friend to both, was not to be disclaimed. Nor even Mr. Inspector, as having been trepanned into an industrious hunt on the false scent. It may be remarked, in connection with that worthy officer, that a rumor shortly afterwards pervaded the force, to the effect that he had confided to Miss Abby Poderson, over a jug of mellow flip in the bar of the Six Jolly Fellowship Porters, that he didn't stand to lose a farthing through Mr. Harmon's coming to life, but was quite as well satisfied as if that gentleman had been barbarously murdered, and he, Mr. Inspector, had pocketed the government reward. In all their arrangements of such nature, Mr. and Mrs. John Harmon derived much assistance from their eminent solicitor, Mr. Mortimer Lightwood, who laid about them professionally with such unwonted dispatch and intention, that a piece of work was vigorously pursued, as soon as cut out, whereby young Blight was acted on, as by that transatlantic dram which is poetically named an eye-opener, and found himself staring at real clients instead of out of window. The accessibility of Riah proving very useful, as to a few hints towards the disentanglement of Eugene's affairs, Lightwood applied himself with infinite zest to attacking and harassing Mr. Fledgeby, who, discovering himself in danger of being blown into the air by certain explosive transactions in which he had been engaged, and having been sufficiently flayed under his beating, came to a parley and asked for quarter. The harmless Twemlow profited by the conditions entered into, though he little thought it. Mr. Ryan unaccountably melted, waited in person on him over the stable yard in Duke Street, St. James, no longer ravening but mild, to inform him that payment of interest as heretofore, but henceforth at Mr. Lightwood's offices, would appease his Jewish rancor, and departed with the secret that Mr. John Harmon had advanced the money and become the creditor. Thus was the sublime Snigsworth's wrath averted, and thus did he snort no larger amount of moral grandeur at the Corinthian column in the print over the fireplace than was normally in his and the British constitution. Mrs. Wilfer's first visit to the mendicant's bride at the new abode of mendicancy was a grand event. Pa had been sent for into the city on the very day of taking possession, and had been stunned with astonishment, and brought to, and led about the house by one ear, to behold its various treasures, and had been enraptured and enchanted. Pa had also been appointed secretary, and had been enjoined to give instant notice of resignation to Chicksey, Veneering, and Stobbles, forever and ever. But Ma came later, and came, as was her due, in state. The carriage was sent for Ma, who entered it with a bearing worthy of the occasion, accompanied, rather than supported, by Miss Lavinia, who altogether declined to recognize the maternal majesty. Mr. George Sampson meekly followed. He was received in the vehicle by Mrs. Wilfer, as if admitted to the honor of assisting at a funeral in the family, and she then issued the order, "Onward!" To the mendicant's menial. "I wish to goodness, Ma," said Lavi, throwing herself back among the cushions, with her arms crossed, "that you'd loll a little." "How?" repeated Mrs. Wilfer. "Lol." "Yes, Ma." "I hope," said the impressive lady, "I am incapable of it." "I am sure you look so, Ma. but why one should go out to dine with one's own daughter or sister, as if one's under petticoat was a blackboard, I do not understand. Apostrophe, neither do I understand. Apostrophe, retorted Mrs. Wilfer, with deep scorn, how a young lady can mention the garment in the name of which you have indulged. I blush for you. Apostrophe, thank you, ma, apostrophe, said Lavi, yawning, but I can do it for myself, I am obliged to you, when there's any occasion. Apostrophe, here, Mr. Sampson, with the view of establishing harmony, which he never under any circumstances succeeded in doing, said with an agreeable smile, after all, you know, ma'am, we know it's there. Apostrophe, and immediately felt that he had committed himself. We know it's there. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Wilfer, glaring. Really, George, apostrophe, remonstrated Miss Lavinia, I must say that I don't understand your allusions, and that I think you might be more delicate and less personal. Apostrophe, go it. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mr. Sampson, becoming, on the shortest notice, a prey to despair. Oh yes. Go it, Miss Lavinia Wilfer. Apostrophe, what you may mean, George Sampson, by your omnibus driving expressions, I cannot pretend to imagine. Neither, apostrophe, said Miss Lavinia, Mr. George Sampson, do I wish to imagine. It is enough for me to know in my own heart that I am not going to apostrophe, having imprudently got into a sentence without providing a way out of it. Miss Lavinia was constrained too close with going to it. A weak conclusion which, however, derived some appearance of strength from disdain. Oh yes! Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mr. Sampson, with bitterness. Thus it ever is. I never apostrophe, if you mean to say, apostrophe, Miss Lavi cut him short, that you never brought up a young gazelle, you may save yourself the trouble, because nobody in this carriage supposes that you ever did. We know you better. Apostrophe, as if this were a home thrust. Lavinia, apostrophe, returned Mr. Sampson, in a dismal vein, I did not mean to say so. What I did mean to say, was, that I never expected to retain my favored place in this family, after fortune shed her beams upon it. Why do you take me, apostrophe, said Mr. Sampson, to the glittering halls with which I can never compete, and then taunt me with my moderate salary? Is it generous? Is it kind? Apostrophe, the stately lady, Mrs. Wilfer, perceiving her opportunity of delivering a few remarks from the throne, here took up the altercation. Mr. Sampson, apostrophe, she began, I cannot permit you to misrepresent the intentions of a child of mine. Apostrophe, let him alone, ma, apostrophe, Miss Lavi interposed with haughtiness. It is indifferent to me, what he says or does. Apostrophe, nay, Lavinia, apostrophe, quoth Mrs. Wilfer, this touches the blood of the family. If Mr. George Sampson attributes, even to my youngest daughter apostrophe, I don't see why you should use the word even, ma, apostrophe, Miss Lavi interposed, because I am quite as important as any of the others. Apostrophe, peace. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Wilfer, solemnly. I repeat, if Mr. George Sampson attributes, to my youngest daughter, groveling motives, he attributes them equally to the mother of my youngest daughter. That mother repudiates them, and demands of Mr. George Sampson, as a youth of honor, what he would have. I may be mistaken, nothing is more likely, but Mr. George Sampson, apostrophe, proceeded Mrs. Wilfer, majestically waving her gloves, appears to me to be seated in a first-class equipage. Mr. George Sampson appears to me to be on his way, by his own admission, to a residence that may be termed palatial. Mr. George Sampson appears to me to be invited to participate in the, shall I say, the elevation which has descended on the family with which he is ambitious, shall I say, to mingle? Whence, then, this tone on Mr. Sampson's part? Apostrophe, apostrophe, it is only, ma'am, apostrophe, Mr. Sampson explained, in exceedingly low spirits, because, in a pecuniary sense, I am painfully conscious of my unworthiness. Lavinia is now highly connected. Can I hope that she will still remain the same Lavinia as of old? And is it not pardonable if I feel sensitive when I see a disposition on her part to take me up short? If you are not satisfied with your position, sir, observed Miss Lavinia, with much politeness, we can set you down at any turning you may please to indicate to my sister's coachman. Dearest Lavinia, urged Mr. Sampson, pathetically, I adore you. Then if you can't do it in a more agreeable manner, returned the young lady, I wish you wouldn't. Pursued Mr. Sampson, respect you, ma'am, to an extent which must ever be below your merits, I am well aware, but still up to an uncommon mark. Bear with a wretch, Lavinia, bear with a wretch, ma'am, who feels the noble sacrifices you make for him, but is goaded almost to madness. Mr. Sampson slapped his forehead, when he thinks of competing with the rich and influential. When you have to compete with the rich and influential, it will probably be mentioned to you, said Miss Lavey, in good time. At least, it will if the case is my case. Mr. Sampson immediately expressed his fervent opinion that this was more than human, and was brought upon his knees at Miss Lavinia's feet. It was the crowning addition indispensable to the full enjoyment of both mother and daughter, to bear Mr. Sampson, a grateful captive, into the glittering halls he had mentioned, and to parade him through the same, at once a living witness of their glory, and a bright instance of their condescension. Ascending the staircase, Miss Lavinia permitted him to walk at her side, with the air of saying, notwithstanding all these surroundings, I am yours as yet, George. How long it may last is another question, but I am yours as yet. She also benignantly intimated to him, aloud, the nature of the objects upon which he looked, and to which he was unaccustomed. As, exotics, George, an aviary, George, a normalu clock, George, and the like. While, through the whole of the decorations, Mrs. Wilfer led the way with the bearing of a savage chief, who would feel himself compromised by manifesting the slightest token of surprise or admiration. Indeed, the bearing of this impressive woman, throughout the day, was a pattern to all impressive women under similar circumstances. She renewed the acquaintance of Mr. and Mrs. Boffin, as if Mr. and Mrs. Boffin had said of her what she had said of them, and as if time alone could quite wear her injury out. She regarded every servant who approached her as her sworn enemy, expressly intending to offer her affronts with the dishes, and to pour forth outrages on her moral feelings from the decanters. She sat erect at table, on the right hand of her son-in-law, as half suspecting poison in the viands, and as bearing up with native force of character against other deadly ambushes. Her carriage towards Bella was as a carriage towards a young lady of good position, whom she had met in society a few years ago. Even when, slightly thawing under the influence of sparkling champagne, she related to her son-in-law some passages of domestic interest concerning her papa, she infused into the narrative such arctic suggestions of her having been an unappreciated blessing to mankind, since her papa's days, and also of that gentleman's, having been a frosty impersonation of a frosty race, as struck cold to the very soles of the feet of the hearers. The inexhaustible being produced, staring, and evidently intending a weak and washy smile shortly, no sooner beheld her than it was stricken spasmodic and inconsolable. When she took her leave at last, it would have been hard to say whether it was with the air of going to the scaffold herself, or of leaving the inmates of the house for immediate execution. Yet, John Harmon enjoyed it all merrily, and told his wife, when he and she were alone, that her natural ways had never seemed so dearly natural as beside this foil, and that although he did not dispute her being her father's daughter, he should ever remain steadfast in the faith that she could not be her mother's. This visit was, as has been said, a grand event. Another event, not grand but deemed in the house a special one, occurred at about the same period, and this was the first interview between Mr. Sloppy and Miss Wren. The doll's dressmaker, being at work for the Inexhaustible upon a full dress doll some two sizes larger than that young person, Mr. Sloppy undertook to call for it, and did so. "Come in, sir," apostrophe said Miss Wren, who was working at her bench. "And who may you be?" Apostrophe apostrophe, Mr. Sloppy introduced himself by name and buttons. "Oh, indeed." Apostrophe apostrophe, cried Jenny. "Ah, I have been looking forward to knowing you. I heard of your distinguishing yourself." Apostrophe, "did you, miss?" Apostrophe apostrophe, grinned Sloppy. "I am sure I am glad to hear it, but I don't know how." Apostrophe, pitching somebody into a mud cart, apostrophe said Miss Wren. "Oh, that way," apostrophe cried Sloppy. "Yes, miss," apostrophe, and threw back his head and laughed. "Bless us," apostrophe apostrophe, exclaimed Miss Wren, with a start. "Don't open your mouth as wide as that, young man, or it'll catch so, and not shut again someday." Apostrophe, Mr. Sloppy opened it, if possible, wider, and kept it open until his laugh was out. "Why, you're like a giant," apostrophe said Miss Wren, when he came home in the land of beanstalk, and wanted Jack for supper. Apostrophe, "was he good looking, miss?" Apostrophe apostrophe, asked Sloppy. "No," apostrophe said Miss Wren. "Ugly." Apostrophe, her visitor glanced around the room which had many comforts in it now, that had not been in it before, and said, "This is a pretty place, miss." Apostrophe, "glad you think so, sir," apostrophe returned Miss Wren. "And what do you think of me?" Apostrophe apostrophe, the honesty of Mr. Sloppy, being severely taxed by the question, he twisted a button, grinned, and faltered. "Out with it." Apostrophe apostrophe, said Miss Wren, with an arch look. "Don't you think me a queer little comicality?" Apostrophe apostrophe, and shaking her head at him, after asking the question, she shook her hair down. "Oh!" Apostrophe apostrophe, cried Sloppy, in a burst of admiration. "What a lot, and what a color!" Apostrophe apostrophe, Miss Wren, with her usual expressive hitch, went on with her work, but left her hair as it was, not displeased by the effect it had made. "You don't live here alone, do you, miss?" apostrophe asked Sloppy. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.